it's going to be a little easier to leave your car at home.
Or even to be a car-free household.
Changes in store for public transportation in the Pikes Peak region.
Next on Loving the Springs, where we celebrate the best and elevate the rest in Manitou and Colorado Springs.
This is Peak Community, Studio 809 Podcast.
In the studio today is Jacob Madsen, Planning and Operations Supervisor for Mountain Metropolitan Transit. Mountain Metro, for short.
Jacob Madsen, you're one of our favorite people because you are kind of running the show over at Mountain Metro.
Bit of a stretch, but I try to do what I can.
We're glad to have you here because we are, at Loving the Springs, we're really big fans of active transportation. We really like to get people out of their cars whenever possible. You made it on time to the studio, so I guess your bus wasn't running late.
Right from base.
I want to mention that you did a great job on another Studio 809 podcast, Peak Environment. That was episode 140 this past summer, Regional Transportation Planning Update. So we'll put a link in the show notes if anybody wants to get the presentation that you made, that sustainability and progress, they can go back and listen to that. But we want to get the latest news on what's changing this fall at Mountain Metro.
Sounds good.
Before we do that, we assume everybody knows what Mountain Metro is, but 1,000 of our listeners might not know.
So yeah, kind of a brief overview of Mountain Metro. We are the public transportation provider here in the Pikes Peak region. There are some others that provide, such as Fountain, but we provide the largest system here in the region. We have fixed route bus. You might hear me use that term a little bit. Fixed route bus is what most people think of when you're thinking of public transit. That's the big 30, 35, 40 foot buses that are going up and down the street on a set route. We also provide two deviated fixed routes, which basically includes a route that's on a bus that's on a defined route, but upon request, it can deviate. As long as you get advance notice for that request, we can deviate up to 3/4 mile off the route to pick up at a safe location. On top of this fixed route and deviated fixed route service, we also have a paratransit service that helps those folks with disabilities that can't use the fixed route bus for one reason or another, for some or all the time. And it provides a very valuable resource for those folks to get to their jobs, to get to hanging out with friends and doing things that make life fun. And then we also have a program called Metro Rides that offers vanpool and carpool solutions. So it's not just the big buses, it's kind of transportation as a whole. And of course, we're involved with a lot of the other services throughout the city, you know, making sure that there are those first and last mile connections. I use that term, that's kind of your, think of your scooters and your bikes, that kind of thing. So that's an easy way to explain that. So yeah, kind of a brief overview as far as brief comes by me.
Yeah, so it's more than a lot of people would think. And I want to make sure if we have time to talk about your new flying cars program too.
Yes, yes, we can do that. And warping. Actually, that'll put us all out of a job if we start doing that.
Yeah. Okay, so what's new from Mountain Metro now?
Yeah, so we recently released our fall service change. We had proposed service change a little over a month ago, and then now we're going forward with what we proposed. Several changes in that. I'll kind of start with some of the bigger ones and kind of work my way down. So one of the bigger ones is our Route 33. That is our service that primarily Manitou Springs goes up to the cog and the incline and back down. That route is a very, very popular route, particularly in the summertime. We see thousands upon thousands of passengers on that route. It's a really, really busy route. And in working with the city of Manitou Springs, we started to look at their new building out of this thing called the Dillon Mobility Hub. It's right there. If you're going along Manitou Ave right before you come across 24 on the east side, there is a thing, you'll see the Dillon Mobility Hub. And that hub is kind of meant to be kind of a focal point. Over the next couple of years, they plan on building it out so our buses can actually access inside the lot. But at this point, we're looking to provide the Route 33 service to that lot.
And that's a place where people can park a car and then bus in.
Correct. Yeah. We're hoping this will help with some of the traffic that's in Manitou Springs, which gets really bad, particularly west of City Hall, if you're familiar with the area. Mm-hmm. It really gets convoluted there. So the thought is to bring folks out kind of from that city core, and then for those that are just going to the incline and up to the cog, and then this would get them through. There are still stops in Manitou Springs, so people can use this route to go from the Dillon Mobility Hub downtown Manitou Springs, but one of the more focused points is getting those people through the city and reducing that traffic that goes there. That's going to start September 28th. Presently, if you're familiar with where Hiawatha Gardens is, their large parking area around the park that's right there. That's currently where Route 33 stops, so it'll be extending east from there.
So quick question, does that route just go from the mobility hub basically through downtown Manitou Springs up to the COG and back down to the mobility hub? So it's just a circular route that basically runs people recreationally and economically and shoppingly through Manitou Springs.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yeah. And it's, like I said, it's immensely successful in the summertime. It is our busiest for a period of time, but over the course of the year, it's about a third. I think it's our third busiest route in the system. But
is there a way to ride a bus from downtown Colorado Springs to that mobility hub?
There is, yes. So our Route 3 connects from our downtown transit center, the terminal, and it's a direct shot right to the mobility hub. It goes right down Colorado Ave, turning into Manitou Ave. And then you can go right into there. But also Route 3 will go, it goes all the way into Manitou up to the Hiawatha Gardens area. So that's where it ends. So it kind of gets you to about the midpoint there. And then 33 can get through the rest of town.
I have another question about that route. I have a ton of friends who are the crazy people that love the incline for some reason. I don't know why you would want to climb that many stairs over and over and over on a weekly basis. I would way rather go up Bar Trail and, you know, have the tree cover, et cetera. But if you're going to hike the incline or Bar Trail or, you know, ride the COG, parking can get quite expensive. So if people were to drive to the Dillon Hub and then take that route, what kind of pricing is it to take the route, say, from the Dillon Hub up to the incline and then back?
So at present, and I say at present because I don't know when people will be listening to this. So at present, it is $5 for the whole day at the Dillon Mobility Hub.
Round trip or as many times as
you want to? Sorry, that's for parking costs. Sorry.
Okay.
The Route 33 actually is a free route, so there's no cost for using Route 33.
So you can park for $5 and ride that to and from for free.
Correct.
So it's another free shuttle, so to speak.
Yep. And I'll put a little plug in for our partners in Manitou Springs. They're trying to get people out to that to go up to the COG or the incline. And they do have like a dynamic pricing throughout town. So the $5 is going to be a better deal, you know, if you're going particularly for several hours, you know, up to the COG or to the incline and coming back, as opposed to paying the dynamic pricing. And that's what they want to kind of push for folks. So
awesome.
I want to put that out there.
How often would that shuttle hit the Dillon Transit Center?
So with this change, we're looking at 30 minutes, and that'll go for basically what we call our off-peak season. We are changing up our off-peak season by increasing our peak season for Manitou Springs. So we're actually going to be increasing, starting into next year, the frequency and length of that season. So going into this fall, it goes a 30-minute service.
So say you get there at 6 a.m., you can potentially grab a bus, but either 6 or 6:30, depending where you are. And then same thing from the incline to go back down, half hour increments, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Cool. It's along that idea.
And how early? I mean, people hike that thing really early. Does it start as early as 6 a.m.?
During the peak season. It does change throughout the course of the year, though. So
just hit your website or the QR codes.
Hitting our website, Hidden Route 33, looking for that on our website. You'll get all the time frame of that. I could probably rattle it off here, but it'd probably be more beneficial, folks, take a look at that, get the idea of what it's going to look like. But when we're looking at next spring, that won't come out for a little while. Still, we need still to plug in some of those numbers and find out the exact timing of the bus in terms of when it'll pick up at certain locations. But I can say right now what we're going to be doing going into the spring next year. So this would start at the end of March. With Route 33 is it would do 10-minute peak service on weekends from end of March to end of October starting next year. So that's why I was talking about that change in the season. Uh-huh. So starting next year, we'll look to go 10 minutes pretty much up until about from 6 a.m. until 5 p.m. on the weekends. And then from about 5 to 8, it goes to 30-minute. And we've looked at our ridership data and see that is really where the big drop off is, right there at 5, whether it's weekday or weekend. And weekdays will be at 15-minute peak frequency from that 6 to 5.
Okay, so that was, definitely hijacked you.
I was just up there recently, and it was excessive watching people trying to park. Excessive is not the right word, but there was an excessive amount of people trying to park, you know, at 7-ish a.m. on a Saturday between all of the recreation and entertainment stuff up there. So this is a great option, and I can't believe how affordable.
Yeah, and this was a kind of a conversation with Mountain Metro Transit as along with Manitou Springs of how we wanted to go with that service. We went for several meetings kind of going back and forth of what was needed, and this is what we all settled on. I think everybody is pretty happy with the outcome. The only caveat I want to put out there is since our service change this year has to fall at September, because at the time we developed for 33 what we were going to do, we couldn't fit it into through this October. So we do anticipate some higher ridership in October and folks probably experiencing more what they experienced in the summer with getting a bus, whether we can't get everybody that's queued up. Mm. So I anticipate there being some challenges, particularly on the nice days in October. More so weekends than weekdays, but still weekdays. So just, you know, bear with us. There's help on the way. And coming into next year, we will have probably a better level of service. Well, we will have a better level of service coming October for next year. So well,
it's patience and grace.
Yeah. And it's a good thing we only have maybe 29 nice days in October.
I was looking at our ridership from last year and trying to get a gauge on it, and it's still pretty heavy. It drops off quite a bit into November, but October is still pretty heavily used. So, but it all comes down to weather. If we have a wet October, probably not as much. But if it's more hot and dry, we'll probably have high ridership there. So weather really hits that route more than anything.
That's great. Well, we're so glad you were able to stop by. Thanks for coming in. I'm just kidding.
So if we just go to 33, and I was waiting for a half hour.
What else have you got for us?
So yeah, along with that, kind of buddied up with that, is we had this other Route 36. We are actually canceling that out in order to take the resources from that route to do what we're doing with the 33. So 36 basically would have become a duplication of the route. 33, now with the 33 moving further out to the east. So 36 basically, that's where it starts now, and it goes through town. And instead of going up Ruxton to the incline, it goes to their Serpentine roundabout, which is just past the Ruxton Ave, which there's only one stop there. So by consolidating the 36 into this, we were able to push this forward, kind of reduce what would have been a duplication in services, and able to move forward the 33 with some of those additional resources. And 36 was a seasonal service. It only did during peak season. So now that resource is being used to kind of keep a longer peak season, provide more service. Overall, more service on the, if you look at hours alone, are being provided by this strategy. And it's exciting. This is something that's been working with Manitou for a couple of years, and you know, seeing what works best for them, what works best for us. And I think we have found a really good place. And this is exciting for us. This is one of the more exciting changes I've had in the last couple of years, at least for me. So it's been a little pet project of mine.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah. Other not as significant changes, but still important nonetheless. Our Route 9, you'll see a theme here, a lot of partnerships in terms of what we're kind of been working with. Our Route 9, which serves from our downtown terminal, it goes up to UCCS campus, just off Austin Bluffs there. In conversations with the school there, we found that there was a kind of a lack of transit options for their students, particularly on the weekends. So UCCS has their own campus shuttle service throughout the week. I believe that it's about every 10 minutes, so they have a pretty good service there for their students, but it doesn't run on weekends. And so we were talking with their folks, their transportation, some of their leadership, and kind of came with this idea of doing a kind of a spur route off of our Route 9. So on the weekends, instead of the route terminating at the campus right there, it's at the El Palmar Center. That's where it currently ends, which is off Austin Bluffs. And what is this cross street? I don't recall the cross street, but it's basically right off Austin Bluffs. And we'll be going a little bit further to the west down to Clyde Way, which is where a large number of their dormitories are.
Oh, okay.
And we are going to be basically sharing a stop. Well, they won't be there on the weekends. It'd be a problem if we were kind of fighting for the stop. But since they're not there, we're able to use one of their stops on the weekends and provide a Saturday and Sunday kind of spur off to this location. So students that are down there, and I highly encourage students, and not even just students, there are residents in the area. This is kind of more angle of the students, but there are definitely, there's residences down there that are not students and more than welcome to use the service. Mm-hmm. But it will only be a weekend service, and it's to help get those students into the system and further down. Otherwise, they'd have to walk. There'd be a fairly significant walk to get to services. So that was another one of our moves on the routes.
Well, I'm guessing that's not a free route.
That one is not free. No, that one is not free.
Does UCCS do something for their
we
students?
We are working with that. I can't go too much further into details on that. We are in conversations with them about what we could do for students. So we're not there yet.
Okay.
But that is definitely something we are moving towards. So yeah, that's another nice program. Hopefully we'll roll out here in the future.
Ooh, I see a future podcast.
Maybe I'll send Elaine for that one. She's our public information officer. She's working a lot more on that. So she'd be a great resource on that one. So those are some of the kind of the more the route style changes. And then we just have a series of other things we're kind of doing. Route 38, so that connects at Montebello and Academy in that kind of area there. And it goes up to the what we call the Northern Hospitals. It's basically Memorial North. So that route goes up there, but there's always been limited stops. We started this service a couple of years back as a express route. So it just had a few stops on the south end of the route and a few stops on the north end. And we've been kind of sprinkling in, you know, stops here and there. And that's kind of the big push this year. We're looking to add three stops in each direction for more access. Looking at that route, that's one of our, I mentioned before, the deviated fixed routes. This is one that people can deviate for, but we're not getting a lot of requests for it. So I kind of do want to plug that if there are people that are off this route that are looking to use it, but it's not close enough and you're within that 3/4 mile, you're welcome to call. I don't have the number with me right now, but there is a number on our schedules. You'll find it there.
And we'll put that number in the show notes too.
It sounds good.
Yeah. I'm sure that's the only reason it's not getting used a lot is that people are unaware.
Yeah. And I agree. That's part of that. And then also the reason I want to see if there's more latent demand in this area for the route by putting these other stops. So we're adding stops. I mentioned the three near Woodland Hills and Union is one of them. Then we'll have one by Lexington and Union and then up by Briargate. So those are kind of the three areas that we're looking at, putting stops down and hopefully bringing more of that demand from the area. It's challenging to find stops on Union, as you would imagine, that are safe and useful for passengers. So we believe we found a few good spots in there, and I think we're good to go. So that's 38 at C. And then we also, I mentioned Route 9 with the students at UCCS. What also came in this discussion was what are some other access points? So I mentioned Clyde Way, which is right off Austin Bluffs there. So our Route 34, which goes from the Citizen Service Center over to Austin Bluffs and Academy. So that's kind of where that route goes. We have about a mile and a half without any stops, kind of almost all the way through the outskirts of the UCCS campus. And so we're adding a stop at Clyde Way. That's right again, right near the student dorms there, adding stops in both directions. So that'll be another option in that area.
So that's not in the campus. That's like right.
Correct.
At,
it's on Austin all right Bluffs? Along Austin Bluffs. Yeah. Okay. So again, you know, trying to find places that are safe to stop a bus there. We were able to work out a few spots we think that are, that should work well. We will be taking, you know, feedback from drivers because they're the ones that deal with this day in and day out. So we have a safety committee that meets once a month, and, you know, I anticipate questions coming up, you know, about these stops and other stops and that kind of thing. So.
And you mentioned that you call it, that's the Citizen Service Center.
Yeah.
Which is on.
Yeah.
Garden
of the Gods.
Yeah. West,
yeah.
Way west, right?
Yeah.
Have you guys managed to figure out a way to make it faster and easier for people in Southeast Colorado Springs to get to that service center?
So I know this was a topic some years ago. I remember that being a topic. What actually helped us, I believe they did actually locate one in, I believe it's in Fountain down there near the Walmart. I think they did something down there which alleviated some of that concern.
Satellite,
this was an issue a couple of years back, I think towards the beginning of COVID, if I recall.
But you're not hearing about that now all the time.
Not myself, but if people are interested in that, we'd love to hear. When it comes to, you know, I would say during our service change is a great time to, we put out there for 2 weeks, typically, not always exactly 2 weeks, but usually we put 2 weeks, we'll put out there for public comment. And that's a great time to put that comment in, but we're accepting comments anytime, all year round. You have an idea for a route. And I know some people may think that, oh, it just kind of falls into a vacuum. No, we bring that up all the time. We have a system that we kind of go through and say, okay, can I start working some of these things? And actually another, you know, that kind of can lead into another change from a citizen comment. So with our Route 32, we had a time point location that was in front of a resident. We try to avoid that as much as we can. So we were talking with this particular resident and we found that in our schedule, there was a little bit too much time there. So the bus would lay over and it'd be, not lay over again, it's a time, but it would stay there to basically to let it go. And so it might be a minute or two that it would stay there. But if you ever see one of our buses where they're kind of not in motion, you'll hear that kind of loud, like the air pressure releasing. And this can be a problem. So in talking with this person and looking at our route and seeing where the Fountain Municipal Transit is there, I started looking and saying, you know, it just kind of makes sense to have this time point where they already pick up instead of having it at this location. So we put out there that we're going to put up with their time point, which makes the most sense to me from a scheduling standpoint, because now you have a time point. And while we can't always be exact, but you have a time point that is on a schedule that says the bus is here at this time, and then Fountain has their own schedule. So you can kind of plan a little bit better, just a little bit. It's a little something extra. And on top of that, it helps this person where they don't have a bus in front of their house. So if they're listening, well, again, whenever this comes out, in a few more weeks from this point, that bus should not be in front of their house.
No more.
Only picking up. If someone's picking up or dropping off, yeah. If someone's there.
I was just thinking, I'd kind of like it if there was a bus stop in front of my house, yeah, but yeah. I wouldn't want to have to listen to that.
And actually, I've had people that actually request the we moved a bus stop to move it back in front of their house. And I'm like, it all depends on the person. It's hard. I'll tell you this much. We have over 900 bus stops in the city. And that's probably the most common inquiry I get from a planning perspective is, can we move this stop or can you add a stop here? So that, maybe it's not quite in the same realm, but that's a very common question. And we look at it all. You know, someone requests to move, I look to see if there is a better place.
Well, and I have to admit, you know, I haven't been an active bus rider because it's a pretty significant walk for me to get to the nearest bus stop. But I should ride my bike to the bus stop and then put my bike on the front of the bus.
And kind of here's mine. So I oversee our planning group. And where I live off on the east side of town. It's about a 3/4 mile walk to my nearest bus stop. So I look at that. And while my area isn't as heavy use as some other areas, it's, you know, area that I look at. I live off Route 23, which is, on the east side of town. And I look at myself, I go, would I use it more if it was closer to my house? Yeah. And I'm saying that as the planner. So I have a stake in this and I'd want to use the bus, but for me, it's the same situation. It's a long walk and I want to make our system better. So we're looking at all sorts of these things. So how can we make it look better? Which actually, throw this out there, we are not there yet, but we're on the cusp of kicking off what we call a comprehensive operation analysis. We call it COA for short. But what that'll look at is our entire system and look for more efficiencies. Are there areas that I can get more efficiency? Could a route, a little tweak in a route, change up? You know, maybe there's two routes that are side by side that are 60 minute, that are close to each other. Maybe there's a tweak I can make those where they combine to one route and I get 30 minute service between the two. That's just, you know, theoretical, but that's something that the COA would look at, along with many other things of, you know, what makes our operations more efficient. Because if I get more efficient operations, I could potentially get more service. So I'm excited about that. I'm hoping that that'll likely kick off kind of going into early next year. That's a very technical study, though.
How do hills factor into the bus stop?
Hills do. So I can go a little bit of the ADA aspect of it. There are some rules with ADA. We have to have a certain percent of slope at our bus stops. So that's 2%. So if you're going uphill, the hill itself, there are some accommodations that are made for our bus stops themselves where the, you know, ADA understands that if the hill is going up at 8 degrees, you can't have a bus stop that's, you know, flat with that.
Right.
So there are some considerations for that. So what actually it does, we do take that into consideration. We're looking at bus stops. Access is huge. So you mentioned hills. Like I always think of a real good example actually is within one of our service changes this year. So the 38, I mentioned that we're putting a bus stop at its Woodland Hills area. So if you're familiar with that area, that's right there by Cottonwood Creek. So you have Woodman on the north end and you have Dublin, I believe, on the south end. And there's this big kind of dip between that. And there's a series of apartments down kind of along the creek. And I'm like, well, if they're going to go back to my Dublin, they're going way up that kind of steep hill to where our nearest stop is at Dublin. And so while these stops aren't hugely far apart, that hill played a role in terms of what we were looking at. And saying, okay, if I'm going to use the bus stop and I got to go up that hill, that's a challenge. I don't have a disability. I don't use a mobility device. But I can only imagine what that'd be like to go up in a wheelchair, particularly a manual wheelchair, like how challenging that could be. Or even if you're in a walker or I use a cane, but even just the average person, it's a pretty steep hill. So it does factor in, yes.
Well, I was thinking about UCCS. Yeah. To get to University Village, it's all downhill. There's a tunnel. It's very easy to do. But turn that trip around as a pedestrian, it's all uphill and it's tough.
Yep. And we look at that. It does factor in. But I will say on the operational end, there are challenges with having stops like mid-hill or even at the bottom of that. So with this one I'm looking at here from the 38, one thing we have to observe is, does it have problems accelerating back up the hill in, say, the wintertime? So, I mean, I always think of Fillmore Hill as being that's one of our long accelerations, which oddly enough, I don't believe we've had significant issues getting buses up there. But if you have a hill that's not been plowed in the winter, or I mean, we it's just weather in general. Could be snowing, just, you know, one day you get a couple inches and you can't get the bus uphill. So some of those things where you get momentum to go back up is important. Plays a small role, something we kind of monitor. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. And I used to drive and I always say weather is, I don't know how to explain it, but weather just plays such a huge role. And it can sometimes be the most benign things that just don't work. When I drove, we had gotten a flurry storm right at rush hour and we had to shut our service down when I was a driver. Couple that with another time, we had 18 inches of snow and we were able to keep driving. So it's just not as simple as, oh, we only got an inch or two of snow. There's all these different things that play into that. So when it comes to the hills, as we're planning our bus stops, that comes into consideration. It's something we monitor. But they haven't created significant issues with the bus stop. It's more the overall route. You know, when we have a really bad snowstorm, sometimes we have to detour to a less steep incline.
Now, it's true, tell me if I'm wrong, but you could increase service if there are more people riding. If there's more people riding, then the buses can run more often or to more places because you've got more customers.
There's some truth in that, but there's a lot more nuance to that. So one of the things that we have to always consider if we're putting more service out there, we need more buses. It can take a year to 2 years to get a bus, depending on if you're getting a diesel or if you're going for an electric. It can take long periods of time, and then getting them ready. So you have to, you know, secure funding for that. We have to identify an area we're looking to expand to. We have to get the buses. We have to get them ready. So it can take quite a while. It's not as simple as, oh, the ridership. But a big part of the funding we get, it's called 5307, is done through a formula fund. It comes from the feds. And with this one, ridership is part of the formula. So if we get more ridership, it brings more money in that way. So there is truth in that, but there's a lot to it.
Well, I asked because I have this idea to increase ridership. But, you know, now that I think about it, I think it's a little bit unrealistic to do it all the time. But maybe a week every summer we could talk her into doing this. How about we get Sandra Bullock to drive, you know, and it'll be a different route every day for a week every summer. Don't you think that would attract some attention?
As long as we bring Keanu Reeves with her. Maybe we'll do that.
Okay. I have to get a grant for that. I can't imagine how much it would cost to have two A-list movie stars come in.
If she's a fan, maybe we could talk her into it. I guarantee that bus wouldn't be late.
Yeah. Be taking corners at 50 miles an hour, and then some of the complaints that you get would actually be true.
Okay. Usually Al is in charge of rabbit holes, but I'll try to start one. Any comments about e-buses and hybrid buses?
So
some people will be curious about
yes.
that.
Yes. So we've recently started putting our hybrids. We got six hybrids. We've recently started putting them into service. You can spot them out there on the road here and there. And they're mostly identifiable. You'll see this little like kind of bump on the top of the bus that differentiates it from the other ones. That's how you can identify the hybrid bus. So those are out there. We're looking to get all the drivers through training. So those are exciting to get out there. We're trialing those right now to see how those work in our system. On the e-buses, electric buses, we have not had much success with our buses. Yeah. That's kind of fairly well known. The manufacturer that we got them from, Proterra, declared bankruptcy a couple of years ago. So it's kind of hard getting parts and getting assistance on those. They've struggled in our fleet. It's not to say that all electric buses would struggle, but it's just one thing they've struggled. So it's kind of take a pause and see, is this what would work in the area? And you mentioned hills earlier. When we were first looking at those, we were under the impression that actually drive better on hills, and we found the reverse. We had more difficulty with them on hills and had to either pull them off of routes or detour around it. So, but once again, it's one manufacturer that, quite frankly, was a battery manufacturer, not a bus manufacturer. Ah. Though they did provide, you know, at the time we're looking at it, they provided, you know, some of the best distance and the levels of areas they could serve. We didn't have any reason to believe it wouldn't, and they'd just been a challenge.
So we're likely to see more hybrid buses joining the fleet rather than electric
We're looking into that.
Right now.
And yeah, if you're looking between the two, it's more likely hybrids. Hybrids have been around. We got our first in 2010. They've been around a little while. They're a little more tried and true.
We had on Tejon electric buses for a short time that failed miserably.
I've heard, so I wasn't here at that point, but I heard some
early
of the stories.
Stuff, yeah.
And I think those were like, the range was like in the low hundreds, I think.
I think it was in the tens.
Yeah. I mean, but, well,
I'm serious. I'm serious. It was very bad. And when it got cold, which is often, it was less than the tens.
Yeah. I will say this with our Proterras, they got actually pretty decent range. I was seeing them out on the road for 13 hours pretty consistently. It's just the mechanical issues became the real challenge with those.
Mm-hmm. Was there any other public comments during your feedback period that you think are interesting that you want to share?
So actually the 33, naturally, because it was the biggest change, garnered the most. What I found interesting, particularly about the comments, is they were on both ends of the spectrum. So I had some folks saying that's too much service and other folks saying we want more bus stops, we want more service. So it was kind of this duality there. And there is some confusion out there about the 33 because it is in Manitou Springs. We got comments, why doesn't Manitou provide their own buses? Well, we're all part of this PPRTA tax and Manitou Springs pays in that as well. They're helping with the cost of services. So it's only right that they get services through this, provided we have a great partnership there. We're regional. We're not just the city. We provide services down in Widefield, for example. So,
and you said PPRTA, that's Pikes Peak Regional Transportation Authority?
Yeah.
Is that what the A is? Okay, and so you get significant funding from
that? We get funding from them, yes.
Okay.
And Manitou Springs pays into that. And not to mention, as I said before, 33, That is a significantly busy route. And you look at what's one of the big purposes of public transit is to get people out of cars, reduce congestion, and get them where they're going. And this is an efficient way to do it. And on top of that, Manitou Springs just doesn't have the parking. There's not the availability. And if people aren't parking in the lots they're supposed to be in, and they start filtering into the residences, well, that's not good for the people of Manitou. So we want to make sure we're a partner in solving that problem.
Yeah, Manitou's a lot like a European town.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
All right, Jacob, I want to ask you about one of my favorite routes. So I work for the Downtown Partnership. So Downtown Colorado Springs is where my heart and home and work is. And I know that a couple of years ago now, the ZEBRI started, so the free downtown shuttle. Yep. And I guess I should note at this point that Downtown Partnership is a sponsor of this podcast. But I would love to hear you talk a little bit about ZEB and future plans to keep it going and the special stops that were put in, anything that you might want people to know about Downtown Colorado Springs free shuttle.
Good question.
Yeah. So as mentioned, the free shuttle, it's one of three routes currently, 33 and 36 being the other ones that are free. Route serves pretty much from the southern area of downtown all the way up to the Robeson Arena. Route that serves between 7 and 10 minutes, depending on time of day and day of the week. And of course, we're all looking for more funding and trying to find ways to keep things going and keep things free where we're able to. And
we definitely want people to know there is a free shuttle downtown.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, one thing that I think is really great about that route, and you know, a lot of my colleagues and people that we work with in downtown Colorado Springs, is you can park once, and then within that square mile of downtown, you can jump on and off the ZEB to, you know, go two blocks down for lunch, go two more blocks down and walk around for shopping. So it's going all the way from Robeson Arena down to Widener Stadium. Yep. So, I mean, when you think about walking that stretch, it's really great that about every two or three blocks, you can jump on and off and park once, pay once, and really spend a day down there. So we appreciate it for the people that are coming down to be entertained and shop and eat, et cetera, in downtown Colorado Springs.
Or if you do what I do, you find a little parking just outside of where you have to pay for it.
Yes. Then...
You know, it's great, right?
It is. And it's like a two-block walk from some other parking that I don't got to pay for. And out of my personal life, my wife and I, we will go down there and we'll kind of wander northish throughout the course of an evening, end up at, you know, the north side of the downtown, maybe in the Platte area, and take the ZEB all the way back to the south. And that's how we get back.
So we know now you don't have any friends at the parking enterprise.
Sadly, I do, but I don't think I'm going to get free parking anytime soon.
So speaking about paying for the buses, one of the fears in any system is, how do I actually pay the fare, which isn't very clear in some systems? We're paying in a different way now. Recently, there was a change. Can you tell us about that?
So, yes, we have an app now that you're allowed to, you're basically able to purchase your tickets.
We have an app.
And it's pretty well used.
That's what our listeners need to hear.
What's the name of the app?
Ride MMT.
But as of this moment, you still have those bizarre machines in every bus that I don't understand why they are so complicated for you to put a few quarters into that machine.
Oh, the fare box?
Yeah.
Ours are pretty antiquated.
Actually still put like coins or dollars in a fare box or buy a ticket or via the app?
Yes. Yep.
So if you're analog, you can still ride the bus.
And with our app, all you do is scan when you get on the bus and that's all it takes.
Well, we're almost out of questions.
We have one that we must ask. No. And that is, what do you personally love about Colorado Springs?
It's location, location, location. I'm a big camper, big outdoorsman. And while it's not directly in Colorado Springs, excellent base of operations here between the different camping options around here. Love going up in the mountains and just hanging out up there in the springs. I got to give a shout out to the parks. I love going to the parks with my kids, going around, enjoying a day at the park, the various trail systems, and doing that sort of thing. So that's really what I probably enjoy most. And I'll put a little plug in for our Pioneer Museum. I actually go down there, not recently, but oftentimes there's been long stretches where I go there like every couple of months and just head down there with my boys, and they love it down. They love the train noise inside that there's a little kind of audio thing you stand under that makes a train noise at the museum that he just absolutely loves and wants to go by that all the time. So family loves going down there, love the Pioneer Museum, and the food trucks are great too.
And what people might not know if they haven't been to the Pioneers Museum, it is a free museum.
Yes. Yep.
Absolutely free. So many cool exhibits. Like you're saying, at least through the summer, Food Truck Tuesdays.
Yes.
So 11 to 1 or something, you go down and check out one of 12, 13 different food trucks. But yeah, what a great resource. And if you're not on their mail list too, their email list, they send out a weekly newsletter with things that are coming up over the weekend, different, you know, seminars, so many cool things. Yeah, get on their email list and check out the free resource if you haven't been there, whether you're a kid or not.
Yeah, I love it there.
They have a great chess exhibit right outside.
Yes. Well, the chess exhibit had to move inside.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, there was enough vandalism multiple times on the eggs playing chess outside the Pioneers Museum that they got moved into Plaza of the Rockies. So they are now inside on the main level.
Oh, well, at least we didn't lose them. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the reconstruction of that little kids' room in the back is, my kid loves that.
Yeah, it was a little sad while they were closed for all their renovations, 9 months or a year, but it's really fantastic reopening, including some absolutely mind-blowing exhibits. So
it's a good museum.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for listening to this episode of Loving the Springs, where we celebrate the best and try to help elevate the rest.
Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.